Grave Tone.
Welcome to Grave Tone Podcast, where horror comes to life in every form it takes. I'm Megan.
And I'm Arthur.
And we're, you know, covering more Fantasia movies today. Yeah.
And today it might not be a little bit of horror, but it is definitely worth talking about.
Yeah. It's still, you know, genre cinema in its own way for different reasons, but we were fortunate enough to receive a couple of screenings for different films throughout the festival, and a couple of them we figured we would kind of roll into one because they're not horror particularly, so they don't really fit into our usual genre, but they were both excellent films in completely different ways.
Yep.
And they really felt worth talking about, so I think we're just going to hop in. We're going to do a little, like, mini double feature. We will make these completely spoiler-free because I have no information on whether or not these films are getting any kind of distribution
any
capacity, and they both have had their world premiere at Fantasia.
Yes.
So with that in mind, I don't think we want to go into too much detail outside of just, like, a few overarching themes and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Exactly.
Perfect. So the first movie that we're going to be talking about...
It's a great name.
It does.
It's so fun.
And it's explained in the film, which I was like, oh, good.
Yeah.
It wasn't that ambiguous. So the first film that we're talking about is a, like, a family drama with comedic elements to it, I would say.
That dark comedy, sure, but yes.
But it does have, like, comedic beats sprinkled throughout, which is called Tight Lettuce. This is a French-Canadian film. It's a Quebec-based film. It had its world premiere on July 18th at the festival, and it, I'm hoping, is going to be able to make the rounds and potentially get, at the very least, a limited distribution of some sort, even if it gets a limited theatrical run here or something.
You know what? I have a strong feeling that it will get some kind of distribution in Quebec, maybe Canada as well.
I really hope so.
You know?
Yes.
I don't know about worldwide, but international.
In Canada, yeah.
But for sure in Canada.
Nationally, I get the feeling you're right because it's also a bilingual film.
Yes.
So, therefore, it's accessible to people regardless of where they live, which is nice. So this film, at its core, you know what, I can read the IMDb synopsis so that we actually do still do a little bit of the usual, even if we're not covering things in the usual way, is a son films his father's addiction, hoping to document his recovery. But as he sacrifices everything to save him, he must decide how much he'll lose for someone who may not want saving.
That is pretty spot on. For once, it is pretty fucking spot on.
It actually, did somebody watch this movie? What? So this film follows a young man named Joel. He's in his late 20s, and he lives in a fairly small town on the border of Quebec and Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
He is and has been dealing with a father with very severe addiction issues for his entire life, as far as we can tell. And I believe based on the timeline they provide, that is correct.
Mm-hmm.
His father, whose name is Bodo, used to be a heroin addict, and then, unfortunately, about 5 years prior, switched over to using opioids, so he uses fentanyl, largely. Opioid addiction is a really big problem internationally. It seems like worldwide, this is a crisis that is occurring in multiple different countries, in multiple different places, and Canada is no exception to that, unfortunately. And it appears that opioids themselves have a quality that is very difficult for addicts to get away from, I believe, once they've experienced it.
Yeah, exactly, because, like, during the movie, and, you know, we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves here, but the whole problem with opioids is that it is very hard to stop because it is super addictive. And the thing is, if you stop and then you get back on the wagon of it, you will most likely die.
Yes. Yeah, because
that's the issue. So that's, like, the very dangerous place of it is that, you know, first of all, good luck trying to stop.
Yeah.
Which commands you if you are able to do it, but the moment you touch it again, it's basically a death sentence.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And also, this movie is based on a true story, which makes it that much more impactful.
Yes, definitely. So that's it. Tight Lettuce is the title. The original French title is Tissiseri.
Mm-hmm.
And it stars Dakota Dalby, who plays the character of Joel, Emmanuel Bilodeau, who plays the character of Bodo, as well as, I mean, for us anyway, just kind of a host of people of, like, spot the actor that you've seen in stuff before, which was kind of cool. Maxime Roy plays Joel's mother, Lucy, in the film. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, is it Christy Burke, I believe, who plays the character of Taylor, who is Joel's girlfriend.
Yes.
And there are a few other people kind of sprinkled throughout. In our case, it's just spot the people who were in things that we were in, that we saw growing up.
There was a bunch
of
them that were in, like, in teenage shows that you've seen. You know, they were kind of like the dad and stuff like that.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them. It's, Yeah.
Exactly.
It's very Canadian, let's put it that way.
Oh, gosh, it sure is. This movie is really, really good. It's really hard to kind of talk about stuff like this because it's, you know, it's not the same thing as, like, you know, when we go through, like, our digs and we give things ratings and we're like, oh, this was an 8 and, like, the kills were great and this was so cool and there was all this blood in this scene and all this stuff. This
can't really do it on this one.
Definitely not. This is obviously an extremely different type of story, but it's just a really kind of poignant examination of, obviously, addiction and what it does to people, particularly in the long run. We don't always get a viewpoint of people who have been struggling with these things for decades.
Yeah.
You know, that's not always what we see. We see people very frequently in film who are more recently, maybe, like, you know, over the past, like, 3, 4, 5 years or things like that, and have only recently kind of fallen into this way of being. But someone who's been like this for upwards of 30 years is just not something that we see on screen very frequently. So it was a different sort of experience to have. Combined with, obviously, the performances in the film are phenomenal, really the whole way through, I will say, from start to finish. Every single character is excellently portrayed, and it does find a way to balance the mostly, you know, quite upsetting themes, obviously, that, you know, and obvious upsetting moments throughout the course of the film, with some moments of, like, genuine humor. A lot of that is due to the character of Bodo. He does kind of provide some form of comedic relief while also portraying this character just in a really honest sort of way.
Yeah, well, I mean, we discussed it, right? At the end of the movie, they show the real footage of this actual man and his actual dad, you know, who was a very successful contractor, right? And he was making a lot of money. And even now, even though he's dealing with these addiction issues, he still has a lot of skills that he can offer, but he just can't use it because of the whole addiction issue, right? And it was a very deep character study for Emmanuel Bilodeau, who is, you know, who plays Bodo, the father, because we were watching it and we're like, How is he doing this? Yeah. Because it is incredible. Some of the mannerisms and the way that he acts in certain situations and everything, you would think that he's dealt with this someone close deal with this. But I don't know if that's the case. Whatever. I don't know the actor, but he for sure watched those documentary footage and stuff. And it was very much a deep character study that was very true to what was happening.
It's a really brilliant sort of, I guess, contrast to see it with that character of Bodo and that's it, the way that his character works through everything that he's dealing with, contrasted with all of the other characters that are around him. There are other addicts, of course, that are part of the story who are friends of his, who you do see from time to time. There are people who are the people who are providing him with the drugs that he uses. And there is, of course, the character of Joel, his son, but also Lucy, his ex, and Joel's girlfriend, Taylor, who's kind of stuck in this situation to a degree because of her love of a man who, you know, cannot bring himself to step away from trying to help his father, because his whole idea behind everything is that if you just love someone hard enough, it's you enough. Can help them.
That's it. It's enough.
And so a lot of the film has to do with, I think, his realization that maybe that's not necessarily the case, but it's also so very nuanced because so many people will deal with these things in different ways, obviously, like in the sense of, you know, not everyone, some people will have to walk away. Some people will stay forever. Some people will help more. Some people will help less. And it's all kind of whatever you kind of have to do to protect your own sort of sanity.
Yeah, and it impacts different people differently, right?
Very much.
His wife, his ex-wife, essentially, you know, she basically, she's still kind of like in the picture, but she doesn't really want to have to do anything with him.
No.
You know, the girlfriend of Joel, she's there, but then it's also, it ends up being way too much for her.
Yeah.
You know, so she has to basically leave. Mm-hmm. So it's that whole thing of, like, where is your priority as the person who's dealing with this?
What are you prioritizing?
Yeah, basically, what are you prioritizing? You're prioritizing trying to save this person who is, you know, essentially
may not want to be saved,
who first of all may not or is not capable of, because sometimes you just can't step away from it, right? Yeah. But then also you have your own life. He's supposed to be 28 or 30.
28, I think.
Yeah, exactly. So you have to have your own life. You know, they're trying to, you know, they have a house and everything, but they're trying to have a nest egg, and they might want to have kids and stuff, right? So it is heavy in terms of a movie, but it also has, like you said, those moments of levity, and also those very nice kind of like sunshine moments that the characters bring about.
Yes.
It is, yeah, seriously, it is a very beautiful movie to watch. Mm-hmm. You should definitely check it out. The director, whose name is
Harrison Hood.
Yeah. He did a very absolutely incredible job at capturing this. Yeah, I don't know. It's very hard to translate. We were watching it. We had a lot of emotions about it, but then at the end of the day, it's kind of like how you deal with it and the impact that it has, and what are you willing to sacrifice, I guess, you know?
I'm getting emotional talking about it, but yeah.
Oh, no. Anyway, so look, the movie is a lot. You should definitely check it out. Hopefully, it will get wider distribution anywhere and everywhere. If you can, it is called Tight Lettuce.
Yeah.
But now, let's talk about our second feature of this episode, which is Attack on Paradise. I keep saying Attack on Titan. It is not.
You did. You said it like three times today.
I know. I'm sorry. No. It is Attack on Paradise, and it is a very interesting take on the representation of really cool action heroes.
Yeah.
Kind of like the John Wick side of things, the whole, what's his name in Die Hard? What's his?
John McClane.
Yes.
Why are they always John?
John Wick and John McClane. It's always John. Name your kid John and he's going to be a fucking killer superstar. Anyways.
Interesting.
So it's a whole representation of that. It is a Dutch and Arabic collaboration, if I remember correctly.
It's a co-production between, Belgium, Sweden, and I'm not sure if there's another one in there. I think there might be. But anyway, yeah.
There is, yeah. I remember reading the fact sheet. It was that, so that's it. It's a whole collaboration with that. And it is completely different from what we were just discussing, because this movie is fucking full of action, thriller, and it is intense.
It's like a crime thriller.
I guess so. Yeah, it's a crime thriller, but also think of it as being John Wick in a tight quarters, high-rise building full of gangsters that he's trying to get, and he has to get through all the levels of the building.
Yes.
But there's also police intervention that's happening at the same time, so he's like basically fucked from both sides. Which is problematic for him.
It's a surprisingly complicated plot, isn't it? Like, I think more than you're expecting it to be. Actually, you know what? I'll read the IMDb synopsis of this, too. By the way, just side note, when you Google this, because I was trying to look for it, and I was like, Attack on Paradise 2026. Mm-hmm. On IMDb, it comes up as Paradise. So I don't know if it maybe had two different working titles or something.
Oh, probably, yeah.
Just be aware of that if you're looking for it, and you're like, what the fuck are you talking about? I can't find it. If you look for it, it's also Paradise, just Paradise, apparently.
That's fair.
Okay. Follows Suleiman, who returns home after a 7-year prison sentence to find his apartment block seized by drug dealers, and he must protect his mother from the surrounding violence.
Yeah.
Yes. So that is the base of it. He has just gotten out of prison after 7 years and is returning to his mom's apartment complex and finds that in the time that he's been gone, it's been taken over by all these horrible gangs, and basically police can pretty much not access the entire area.
It's like a no-go zone.
Yeah,
there's one big gang lord, I guess you want to call it, whatever it is, that kind of owns the whole building
pretty much.
Runs a bunch of different operations from it, from, you know, drug trafficking to human trafficking to guns and arms and everything in between.
Yeah. And unfortunately, Suleiman's mother still lives in the building.
Yes.
And so, obviously, you know, he is, of course, just going to see her after he's been released. Mm-hmm. But when he realizes what's happening, he obviously is like, what the fuck? Like, I need to get to her, and I need to get her out of this situation. And yes, in the meantime, exactly like Arthur mentioned earlier, you also have another part of the story in which police have finally decided to intervene and to raid the building. And so that's happening at the same time. And of course, as these things tend to go, the character gets caught up in everything that's going on, essentially. It's just, man, this was a lot of fun.
It was super fun.
It was so fun.
It is also a very interesting, I guess, juxtaposition of what the general public perceives as bad, a person
yeah.
who is this gang lord who took over the building, but also people who are living under his, I don't know if you want to call it reign or sure. under his power, right? They don't necessarily see him as a bad person.
Yeah.
And we do get glimpse of this when he's actually helping people.
I know, it's interesting, isn't it?
He's actually, like, literally helping people without asking anything back. He helps a mother with whose boyfriend allegedly left, but, you know, obviously he killed him
yeah.
for XYZ reason, but he gives her money, right, to kind of yeah. help going along because the guy took everything with her. And then, you know, there is medication that he offers to people like Suleiman's mother
yeah,
who
true.
Needs it for the insulin and everything, yeah. you know, so it's very interesting.
Well, it's the idea of, you know, how a dictator can still be seen as like some sort of all-important ruler by a certain
yes.
set of people because... like they do these horrible things, but then in between they're like sprinkle here's a little bit of nicety just to sweeten things up a little bit. You stay over there and just deal
with it.
And deal with the horrible circumstance that you're living in. Go on and do that. Like it's kind of got that little vibe to mm-hmm. it, and it is kind of almost an interesting sort of exploration of like classism in certain different communities in large cities. And it's got that great thing that you do see in particularly older European cities. It's set in Antwerp in Belgium.
Mm-hmm.
And the apartment building is just, it's one of these like, almost like iconic kind of part of the backdrop of large European cities, these like really large concrete stone apartment complexes that were built back in like the 70s and 80s. Mm-hmm. And there are a ton of floors in them, with like, you know, 15 to 20 floors in them, a ton of units in them, and everybody just functions as their own little community in them.
Essentially,
to a degree. Yeah.
Great buildings, by the way.
Yeah, these
I'm
are...
just saying, they keep the heat in,
yeah,
and it's cold in the...
Oh, they were built to last.
Oh, yeah,
things.
That's what I'm saying. It's fucking awesome.
And you see them. These are things that recur, I find, anyway, in what I've seen in multiple cities across Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a very
mm-hmm.
common thing to see. So, it's cool to kind of see an action film set in something that's very commonplace in a lot of these areas, which is
yeah,
kind of fun.
That's it.
The lead is great. I'm going to butcher his last name.
I'm so sorry.
I apologize.
He's just Suleiman, Solo Man,
yeah,
the legend.
Exactly, yeah.
He has like seven different nicknames as the character.
Yeah, he does.
You know?
It's true. They kind of use a few of them. So the actor's name is Saeed Boumazoug, I'm pretty sure,
right.
is what it is. Apologies if I mispronounced it. I am sorry. He was great.
Oh, he was amazing.
I thought he was so fun.
But he was also not like one of those superheroes, I'm going to go and get shot at 15 times and
no.
still go and beat up the bad guy. He was playing a very real person.
Yes.
That
he's like,
you know,
Jesus Christ, I just want to get my fucking mom out of here.
Yeah, but he was also like, you know, he was like, yeah, if he gets injured in the shoulder, he can't really use that arm, and that is normal. That's how it works.
Yes, I understand.
So it was
what
very
you mean.
Realistic,
he's
you know?
Not like a superhuman of some
That's
sort.
It.
Like he's, so all we know about him is that he has fight training
yes.
and he's very good at it. But there's no like, oh, and he, you know, can withstand bullets and stuff like
no.
that. Like there's no thing like that. He's very quick and he has really impressive fighting skills.
Yeah.
And that's about it.
A lot of discipline, and he's very resourceful and everything.
Yes.
But yeah. So essentially that's kind of like what happens, right? He gets out of prison after 7 years, I think, of being
it's
there.
7 years, yeah.
Yeah. And then he goes to see his mother with a gift.
Yes.
And realizes
it's a gift basket. It's so funny.
It's a gift basket.
It's so funny.
It's great. And he realizes that, you know, the building, like we said, is taken over by these gangsters. And then at the same time, the police is coming to
raid.
Trying to raid and take down this head.
Yes.
Who's called the prince.
Yes.
Who's super douchey, just by the way,
oh,
whatever
he's so
it is. But
gross.
He's ugh. One of those that, like, just sends all of his goons, I guess, to do the job for him, but doesn't really do much of anything
yes.
himself.
We've just seen a lot of that, you and I, in the
oh,
past,
God.
Like, 72 hours, haven't we? We went to see The Odyssey.
Yeah.
And there's a character in the film, I'm not going to get into it in case people haven't seen it, but there's a character in the film who really gives that energy
yes.
of, like, slimy little piece of shit who's like, go do this for me. But
that's it. So then that's it. He's caught in between this whole trying to, you know, he really doesn't want to be involved. But he's like not trying to take down the gangsters unless they're in his way.
Oh, yeah.
And he's not harming the police unless they're obviously trying to kill him.
Well, yeah. So the fun thing about this film is that it does a great job of weaving in multiple different aspects of these really iconic action crime thrill
yes,
like films
very well
that
said.
We really like, in the sense that you've got from like the fight sequences, and I would say even certain things like some of the lighting and stuff, you've got mm-hmm. like a very John Wick-esque side of things, but you also have the everyman aspect of Die Hard, where he's just like a dude who happens to be good at something, right? Like John McClane is a cop, obviously, so he's not an idiot, and he kind of knows how to work mm-hmm. certain things in the Die Hard films. And so Suleiman has some sort of a background, of course, obviously, in probably something illegal, maybe to a degree, and because the fighting skills don't come from nowhere, you know, and but they are people who are just existing in this place where they've gotten stuck in this situation, and they're like, I have to get out of it somehow. I just have to reach my goal, right? John McClane is trying to get to his wife and get Holly out of the building and save people. And Suleiman is just trying to get to his mother and get her away from all of this as well.
Yeah, like the whole basic plot of it is that he's trying to get medication because he met her, right? But then she needs meds.
Yeah.
And then he tries to get it, but of course a bunch of stuff starts getting in his way.
All the shit happens. So that's part of the problem.
Exactly. Yeah. But let me tell you, like, the fight sequences are very good.
Oh, they're so good.
Especially in the tight quarters and everything. The choreography was absolutely amazing. His performance as Suleiman is very, very good.
He also co-wrote the film. Oh, well, there you go.
I think I remember reading in the fact sheet that he was saying that, you know, like, all these great movies exist and there's all these heroes, essentially, as characters, but there was no one that would represent him.
Uh-huh.
Right, as like an Arabic man or whatever and that's when he decided to start writing this and producing it and whatever it is, or starting in it, I guess.
Yeah, definitely, because and that is often the case. Look at the two films I'm referencing the most are both white
men that's it.
Who are playing the lead characters, and that's something that you see especially throughout the 80s and 90s, you know, over and over and over again, right? Mm-hmm. You see your Arnold Schwarzeneggers and your Sylvester Stallones and your Bruce Willises and, like, all of these people.
That was the thing, right? It was, like, big, muscly man.
Of course, yeah. I mean, Bruce Willis was an outlier in that because he just looked like a normal dude. And everybody was like, thank God, because all of these guys on steroids are, like, a little bit crazy and over the top there. You know, the closest that you got to anything, even, like, maybe slightly slighter in build, was still, like, Jean-Claude Van Damme, which is ridiculous.
He was still, like, super ripped.
Insanely.
Yeah.
So it's just, like, very unrealistic, unattainable, whereas John McClane feels attainable. Like, he feels like a person, like a concrete human being.
Just like a normal person.
And Suleiman also feels very much coded in that same sort of way. I think it's cool that we're starting to see some action films that are a little bit like this. I'm thinking of something like Monkey Man from a couple of years ago, maybe. I mean, we watched that. We both really enjoyed it because we just thought it was
Dev
cool.
Dev Patel, right?
I'm a huge Dev Patel fan. Love him. I have an argument that in this year's release of Wuthering Heights, he should have played Heathcliff, and I think he would have been fucking phenomenal. And that's no shade to Jacob Elordi. I just didn't like the movie.
Right.
So I just think that, like, I like that we're kind of starting to get these different sorts of shades of these type of characters, that we're getting the everyman, but we're getting the everyman who doesn't look like every other person that you've ever seen in a movie ever, which is cool. And I like it.
Yeah.
And it's more interesting.
And I don't know if it was like the production or the way that they filmed it or just a different take on it, but because it was very much a Dutch production, right?
Mm-hmm.
It felt very realistic and very gritty.
Very much,
it wasn't like over the top with giant explosions everywhere and this guy runs through fire and kills the bad guy. No, it was very real.
It's really cool to look at. There was a lot of really cool stuff, but I would argue that it was overly stylized.
That's it.
Which is something that you get in a lot of those other movies. And I'm never going to argue about that. I happily went to see a bunch of the John Wick movies in theaters.
We, like, watched all of them together.
I think we didn't see the first one in theaters, but I think subsequently every one that came after that we went to see in theaters. And, yeah, if you're throwing Keanu Reeves into a situation where you're just putting this cool, like pink and purple color palette over him and he just, like, shoots a bunch of people, I'm like, yeah, okay, I'll watch that. That's great. But it's not realistic.
Yeah.
You know, and again, it's still an over the top thing because he's like a trained assassin and stuff like that. This character feels so much more rooted as just like a human being.
I just think just that he was, back in the days, he was some kind of enforcer.
Probably.
Right. And then he was probably trying to get out of it or whatever it is.
Yes.
And then that's what happens, right? Yes. Like, the reason why he kind of ends up in prison is that he attacked two police officers.
Yes.
That's really it.
That's it. And I would also say that this one's fun because it's got a lot of genuine humor in it as well. It's got some really great comedic beats. There are a lot of, like, really good moments between different characters that show up throughout the course of the story. And yeah, you've got like kind of an over-the-top, really douchebaggy, douchey, like lead bad guy and some other people in there. You know, you always have like a person who's like over-the-top strong and stuff, like, you know, like those types of things. So you have all of those little tropes and tricks in there, but it does... It really stands up, I think, as its own thing, its own idea. And it was just, like, a really good time. This is a great movie to watch with, like, a whole group of friends.
Yeah. No, seriously, it was really fun. It was a lot of action. There was stuff going on all the time. Yeah. There's an underlining story behind it, you know, like, yeah.
I hope this movie gets, like, an actual distribution. I know it'll probably more likely be, like, a European
one before it gets over here. I was going to say, yeah, probably more Europe.
But this was its world premiere over here.
Right.
So I'm kind of hoping that maybe that, like... helps it a little bit at the very least, like, even if here it doesn't get a theatrical release, that it maybe gets like some sort of like VOD or streaming rights picked up or whatever the case may be, so that hopefully more of an audience can find it, because I just wouldn't want it to get lost in the shuffle of these types of films, because it's really such a fun time, and I feel like an audience, like most audiences, would really appreciate this movie.
No, I have to absolutely agree. Attack on Paradise, yes. Or just apparently Paradise,
or just Paradise. Just found. Yeah. You know, it's all good.
Yeah.
Watch it. You can all deal with subtitles every once in a while. It's fine.
Oh, seriously.
So much better. Can anybody else not watch dubbed movies? Because I sure can't.
No.
It bugs me.
I can't do it. They really change the voices and I just don't get it.
Yeah, I really need to hear what the person actually sounds like. So I have a tendency to just watch. I mean, I watch everything. We watch everything with captions, but...
Yeah, now it's like a requirement.
Oh, no, I know. It's really bad. Anyway, sorry that this was like... we veered off a little bit from our usual fare. This, I will wholly admit, neither of these movies are horror in any real
way.
But
they are worth to be talked about.
Yes, definitely. But they're great films. Really, both of them are excellent. I'm really glad that we got the opportunity to see them.
Yeah.
And I hope that we get to talk about them with more people, I think, in the future as they get a little bit of, like, a wider release. Mm-hmm. And they hopefully get to do their time a little bit, too. That would be great. So I think that... Gosh, I'm seeing a couple of movies solo in the next few days, so I think that we're going to have more coming your way. We're going to have a couple of the slightly larger, slightly more hyped movies from the festival coming your way, too. We're going to be checking out Nightborne, which I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah, which is released on Shudder quite soon.
By the 22nd, 23rd, something like that.
We're going to see it before that.
Yeah. So I'm really looking forward to being able to talk about that one as well. That was one of my, like, I think most hyped from the festival when it was released. And then we're just going to have everything else over the next couple of weeks. I cannot wait to see what else we come across, because we've got some other like really great upcoming ones, including a couple that have recently gotten trailers that I think people are going to be pretty excited about.
Awesome. Yeah.
Okay. In the meantime, guys, you can always follow us, of course, at Gravetone Pod on all of the socials, so you'll be able to keep up with everything that we are kind of working through as we are checking out all of this stuff for Fantasia. And everything else that we have going on over on the website is at gravetonepod.com. There's an entire section dedicated to Fantasia over there as well. If you would like to check that out, you should definitely do that too. But until next time, stay scared and stay tuned.
Ciao, guys.